Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to today's Capital Land 3Q 2018 earnings call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star and one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Wednesday, the 14th of November, 2018. I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Grace Chen, the Head of Investor Relations. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. This is Grace. I'm Head of IR for Capital Land. Thanks for waking up early to discuss with us our 3Q 2018 financial results. As you know, this is the first time we're holding an earnings call for the media and analysts for 3Q results, and we would like to continue to do that every first and third quarter of the year. For the first half and annual results, we will keep our usual briefing at Capital Tower. I hope that works well for everyone. Today, I have Mr. Andrew Lim, our Group CFO, with me. He will take us through the key highlights of the quarter before we open the line for Q&A. We also have a number of colleagues who have dialed in, such as our CIO for Capital Land China, and they may participate during the Q&A. Without further ado, I will pass the line to Andrew to address everyone. Andrew, please.
Thanks, Grace. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for dialing in. I'm going to be referring from the 3Q handout that you will hopefully have in front of you. Would like to take you through our 3Q and year-to-date results and some of the highlights that have kept CapitaLand Group busy over the last 3 months. Turning to page five, our headline numbers. I think we're delighted to report that year-on-year, our 3Q PATMI and operating PATMI both performed strongly, registering 14% and 13% increases year-on-year respectively. The key takeaways from the quarter on page six, most of the operating performance was driven off the back of two key events. We have had increased contribution from investment properties that have been opened or acquired. For those of you who follow us, you know that some of these assets include Asia Square Tower 2 in Singapore. In China, our Raffles cities, the three new Raffles cities that opened last year, are now starting to contribute. Raffles City, Shenzhen, Changning, and Hangzhou. In Germany, the MAC next to the property next to the Frankfurt Airport, as well as Galileo, which was acquired by CCT, are all examples of improvements and enhancements to the overall group operating investment portfolio that have begun to contribute meaningfully to our operating income. In addition to that, we've recognized a value uplift from the divestments of Westgate Mall. This is the 70% of Westgate Mall that CapitaLand Group owned and has since divested to CMT. As you know that we sold 20 malls or announced the sale of 20 retail malls in China earlier this year. We have closed the sale of 18 of those malls in the third quarter, and therefore have recognized the remaining amount of the portfolio gains from the sale of those 18 malls. Balance sheet remains strong and resilient. You can see some of these key coverage ratios on that page. If I look at the year-to-date numbers, the year-to-date numbers are slightly lower on the PATMI side at 1.28 billion. The reason for this, as you will know, is that in 2017, we recognized a substantial gain from the sale of Nassim. If you strip that sale out, our overall PATMI would have registered a similar increase of 14% year-on-year growth compared to the look at the third quarter numbers. Operating PATMI, whilst 13% lower year-on-year, would have been 10% higher if you had stripped out these gains from the sale of Nassim. We're very pleased with the year-to-date numbers and the performance of the group as a whole in the first 9 months of the year. Page eight will give you some color as to how that profit breaks down. You will see that cash PATMI makes up 74% of total PATMI, which is well in range of our target, demonstrating high-quality income for the group. 51% coming from operating PATMI and close to 290 million coming from the combination of portfolio gains and realized revaluations. Page nine is a slide on ROE. We thought this is important to show our stakeholders, because we are very clear about the target that we have set for ourselves, and that is an 8% plus ROE on a sustainable basis. We are at 6.9% unannualized for the first 9 months of the year, and remain optimistic that we will meet our target for the full year. Page 10 gives you a sense of where we are on a group basis in terms of total AUM. We're at $92.8 billion. If I include the announcement yesterday of RCCIP 3's acquisition of H55 in Shanghai, you can add $4 billion of AUM to our group total. Target again is to hit $100 billion by 2020. If I drill down from group AUM on the next page, this is our consolidated balance sheet. Gives you a flavor of where we are on balance sheet around the world, as well as our operating platforms and our verticals. You will know that we seek to maintain a target of about 50-50 developed and emerging markets. From a consolidated balance sheet perspective, the split as of 3Q is 56.7% DM. Another one of our targets is to maintain a run rate of about 20 to 80 in terms of our trading and IP split. Again, as of 3Q, the trading properties made up about 21%. This is on an effective share basis. So in terms of these two targets, I think we are nicely in range of what we have set for ourselves. Turning to page 12, this is another target that we've communicated previously. This is the $3 billion in gross value capital recycling that we have set for ourselves annually. Again, I'm delighted to report that as of 3Q, we are close to $4 billion of divestments year to date. In the first half of the year, we divested about $3.1 billion gross value. We have included that 70% stake in Westgate, and in Q4, we have also since sold Citadines Harbourview in Hong Kong. Some of you have asked us before about the challenges of redeploying that capital, and you can see that there is no shortage across the group of the ability to redeploy these proceeds into what we believe are strong investments. So again, working off 1H, where we had $1.8 billion or so reinvested, there is a long list of assets and platforms across the group and across our geographies that take us to a subtotal of about $4.7 billion in gross value terms reinvested as of 3Q2018. And subsequent to that, we thought it would be helpful to include the two recent investments into China, 75% stake in a mixed-use site in Guangzhou, the Greater Bay Area, which is an area of great strategic interest for the country as well as for capital land. And then yesterday, as you will know, the iconic investment into our third Raffles City, 10th overall in Shanghai through RCCPI3. So we are at a run rate of about $6 billion already and counting as of this point in time. Turning to our geographies, the next few slides will take you through a snapshot of what we've been up to through our primary SBUs. Page 13, Singapore. Looking across from left to right, we have been busy in our various verticals. In residential, we have teamed up with CDL on the Sengkang's mixed-use site. This will be expected to complete in 2022 with approximately 700 units. In the lodging platform, ART has acquired a development site in One North, which will be built and branded as one of our three current life developments scheduled for Singapore, expected completion 2020 with about 324 units. This will be the first co-living property in Singapore's research and innovative business hub. And as you know, in the retail space, we have divested 70% of Westgate to what we believe is the logical owner of the mall, and that is CMT. Turning to China, I think China, the headline is all about replenishing our land bank. The run rate, as you know, is for us to be able to sell and hand over 6,000 to 8,000 units a year, representing 8 to 10 billion RMB in value terms. And I think Zixiang, who's on the call, and the China team have been hard at work trying to replenish that land bank. This is the second such piece of land that we have acquired in short order following the acquisition in 2Q of a site in, of a mixed-use site in Chongqing. This again is in Guangzhou, again part of the Greater Bay Area that we are very excited about. Focusing again on our five core city clusters, this will add 1,300 units into the pipeline, hopefully to be recognized by 2021. Overall, we now have 3,400 plus homes into the pipe this year, representing about 420,000 square meters. In addition to that, we have added about 587,000 square meters of commercial space into the pipe that Zixiang can share with you later on. Slide 15 is, we thought, given the iconic nature of the project, even though it is technically not third quarter, we would include some information on this. Maybe I can take the opportunity to turn this over to Zixiang, who can walk you through some of the key highlights and why we're so excited to be acquiring this, again, iconic project on the North Bund in Shanghai. Zixiang, please take it away.
Good morning, everyone. This is Zixiang calling in from Shanghai. So yes, just as Andrew has mentioned, we're very excited about this new acquisition. This is going to be our third Raffles City. It is located in an area of immense growth in the future. This is on the North Bund. So those of us who are familiar with Shanghai, we will easily relate to the location. It is likely in the future to merge with the traditional CBDs in Puxi, where our first Raffles City is located, as well as Putong Lu Jiazui. With this merger, this will be the future enlarged or enhanced CBD. And our project, I liken it to be like the elements in Hong Kong, you know, where the elements in Hong Kong has that fantastic view of the central island in Hong Kong itself. Our project has this amazing view of the Lu Jiazui, the post, I would say the postcard view of Shanghai. So it contains mainly two asset classes. It has a 180,000 of office. This is housed into two towers. These are the tallest twin towers in Shanghai. And then it has about 120,000 of mall. The whole northern area is actually situated in Hongkou district, which is actually currently underserved by retail. In fact, CapitaLand has a very successful Hongkou Longzhimeng Capital Mall about 3 to 4 kilometers away, and that's doing very well. So we are happy to continue to serve the area of Hongkou as well as the entire Shanghai. This asset will sit on two subway lines, line 12 already operational, and line 19, which is probably a year to two from operation. Line 12 is the most interconnected line in Shanghai, and line 19, coincidentally, will be the second most interconnected line. So we're very excited about what the transport network is going to bring to the asset itself. So a bit about Shanghai. Shanghai right now is doing really well. I believe it has crossed 3 trillion in terms of GDP, a huge population, 24 million. About 1,300 MNCs are already headquartered in the city. It has the busiest aviation hub and lots of pro-business initiatives to attract foreign investments. And in the first 9 months of 2018, Shanghai's property investment has also increased by 83% year-on-year to hit the tune of $23.5 billion. So we are happy to continue to stay invested in Shanghai. And then with the third Raffles City, we will be able to grow our presence, not just in Shanghai itself, okay, but also to continue to grow the Raffles City brand. This is one of the competitive strengths that we have. Maybe I will just hand back over to Andrew, and then later on, if there are any specific questions about H55, okay, I will be happy to take that one.
Thank you, Zixiang. I think another reason why I like this as an investment is that this is as brownfield as it gets. So rather than acquire a clean piece of land, and it's, for those of you who know, sometimes we have taken quite a while to develop the Raffles City projects given the complexity of the integrated development product. In this instance, we are acquiring an asset that is perhaps 6 months away from being operational. And so time to market and time to operational income for us is accelerated in this instance. Obviously, there is a price to pay for that acceleration. We feel that in the current environment, this is the right decision, the right trade-off for the group. Investing it through the private equity product where CapitaLand has an effective stake of roughly 21% in such an investment also, I think, makes sense in terms of an optimization of capital deployment. So if you have any questions around H55, please save them when we hit Q&A, and we'll be happy to take them on. Turning to Vietnam on page 16. As you know, Vietnam is all about growth and growing the platform as we strive towards 100 million plus in contribution to group profit by 2020. The Vietnamese team is hard on the ground building pipeline in residential and now also in commercial, again, through our private equity product. So we're delighted to say that we were able to secure a new project in Ho Chi Minh District 2. It's a very heavy residential district. This will add to the circa 2,400 units currently in development, and that represents about 712 million in value terms, Singapore dollars. And of that, we expect to recognize about 10% in handover for the remaining quarter of the year. So Vietnam remains, again, a key growth market for us, and we expect to be able to announce more projects in the near future. Turning to international, this is the story in international is one that we have previously shared with you. So we have made a sizable investment into a new asset class, broadening our lodging platform with a $1.2 billion investment into 16 multifamily properties in the U.S. And we spent some time with you in person when we spoke about the investment. So I'll leave that there. And if there are any further questions on that, we'll be happy to take them in Q&A. The next few slides takes us into the platforms. Now, having run through the four key geographies, we turn to lodging. In lodging, the headline for Q3 was a continued scaling up of our platform as we head towards 160,000 keys by 2023. We acquired 70% stake in Tausia, which we also shared with you during the quarter. This adds 20,000 units into the Ascott system pipeline. As we are very focused on growing the scale of the business in order to achieve economies of scale and build the margin into the business. What is exciting about Tausia is that not only is Tausia a leading operator within Indonesia, capturing the intra-country travel of an emerging middle class, Tausia has plans to expand their product into ASEAN. So it gives us another avenue of growth into markets such as Vietnam, the Philippines, with Tausia's specific brand of business hotels in the midpoint level, which is slightly below the current positioning of the Ascott family of brands. So we think the fit is very good. We think the profile of growth into the segments, the geographic segments, is dovetails with what we are trying to do in Asia. Turning to retail, I think retail is about good leasing momentum for two of our primary developments in Singapore, namely Funan and Jewel. Both of these are scheduled to open in in 2019. Both are generating tremendous excitement for slightly different reasons. I've personally been to look at Jewel, and I'm very, very excited for all of you to walk through it when she opens. Pre-leasing is strong on both fronts, so we hope to report some good news early next year. Mm-hmm. For those of you who follow CMT, I think the retail space in Singapore has also begun to show some momentum, where we had good quarterly growth in same-store tenant sales and occupancy. The other thing that is interesting this quarter is some of you may have seen we opened the Nomad store in Plaza Sing. For those of you who haven't been down, I encourage you to go down and take a look. It is an exciting concept that we are taking out of the lab and putting it into a live environment to see how our shoppers and tenants respond. So we're very excited about that. Stay tuned for more details as that concept evolves. Page 20 on commercial. The CapitaLand commercial folks are hard at work on Office of the Future, blending the current model with core, adding flexible concepts into the core tenant model. This includes co-working, which is why we have signed up the work project in a joint venture to help us build out the co-working platform. Those of us who work at Capita Tower, including myself, are very excited to see the progress being made in adding the flex components into the current ecosystem, which will allow us, exactly as the name suggests, much more flexibility in treating Capital Tower as an entity unto itself, giving us options in how we spend our time and giving us greater work-life balance. So I think that the previous three slides, I hope, demonstrate how our platforms work very closely with our geographies in optimizing the value of our assets. And this is why we took the decision to reorganize CapitaLand in this manner, spreading out the DNA and the ability to optimize value across the various assets in our geographies. Last but not least, certainly, is on ESG. We thought it would be helpful to share what we've been up to on the ESG space. And on that front, I'm particularly delighted to share that we announced a first and largest sustainability-linked loan in the real estate sector for Asia, where we signed a $300 million loan with a committed partner in DBS, audited by an equally committed partner, RobecoSAM. What I love about this loan is that it is explicitly tied to our achievements in ESG. The better we do in ESG, as audited by an independent party, the lower the pricing on the loan becomes. So there is an explicit link between our ESG efforts and the cost of financing in a rising interest rate environment. So there's very little not to like about the timing and the product itself. We would love to be able to do more with equally committed partners in the future. So I think that's it in a nutshell. We've been through a quick run through of the financial performance, the geographies, as well as the platforms. I'll take the last couple of minutes to share with you how we are on the balance sheet and liquidity position. If you turn to page 25, here are our primary credit ratios. I don't think there's anything too controversial here. Our fixed rate debt remains high, and we will continue to aim to do that, given where we are in the interest rate environment. Debt maturity at 3.4 years. And our NTA reflecting robust growth in the business. If I look at the debt towers on 26, the 2018 debt is fully refinanced. 2019 debt of $3.3 billion represents about 15% of our gross debt of $22 billion. We are well underway in looking at refinancing options for the debt that we intend to refinance. Cash currently is at $5.3 billion, pretty flat quarter on quarter. $2.4 billion of that sits at CapitaLand Group. The rest of it sits throughout our subsidiaries, joint ventures, and so on and so forth. So net debt currently is at $16.6 billion. And finally, our interest rate on a blended basis, very delighted to say that we are able to maintain a very attractive blended interest rate given where we are on a rising rate environment. So I think we are bang on close to 8:45. What I'd like to do now is to pause and take questions from those of you who may have them. Just Young and I are here for you. Operator?
Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star and one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Once again, it's star and one if you wish to ask a question. And our first question comes from the line of Brandon Lee from Citigroup. Brandon, your line is now open.
Hey, morning, guys. Andrew, just a couple of questions on the balance sheet side. Can you give us a breakdown of net gearing or LTV on the country level in Singapore and China, if possible? And my second question is, can you give us a sense of how much of your China income is hedged? And if not, do you intend to do so, given what we are seeing on the RMB rate right now? Thanks.
Thanks, Brandon, and welcome back.
Thanks.
The answer to the first question, unfortunately, we don't provide. It is difficult to compute. I would say that it is not something we look at specifically at the country level. As those of you who follow us know, CapitaLand Treasury is centralized, and so what we'd like to do is to allocate capital to our SBUs as is needed. We then manage the foreign currency exposure depending on whether we can naturally hedge, which is obviously the first order of business. Wherever we can naturally hedge, we do so. But in some instances, it is structurally, and in other instances, from a pricing standpoint, it is impracticable to do so. So as a result, we prefer to take a more holistic view at the group level. And in some cases where we may have a higher a gross debt exposure on the ground, we then compensate that with taking more of a net debt position in other areas to manage the overall net debt position. Sorry, what was your second question?
Oh, it's on the whether your China income is hedged, and if it isn't, do you intend to start doing so, given what we're seeing on the RMB front?
Yes, thank you. Okay. So a couple of things. We don't typically hedge the balance sheet. It is, again, we feel that the trade-off between the P&L hit on taking a hedge on the balance sheet position is something that we don't intend to make right now. We believe the P&L hit is too high. What we do is that when we have visibility and predictability on the income coming back from our various SBUs, then we take the position to hedge. So a good example was the sale of the P20 retail assets earlier this year. That was a transaction that gave us good visibility on when we were anticipating to close and when the funds would be repatriated back into Sing dollars. So that was, we made the decision to lock in the hedge early on, and as a result, we were able to have very good visibility on the Sing dollar portfolio gain that we have since been recognizing. So I hope that answers your question. Oddly enough, or by whether coincidence by design, when we were budgeting and forecasting our RMB rates at the end of 2017, the forecast RMB was 0.2, which is 1 to 5. And I think based on the last time I looked at the rates, we were somewhere around 5.04. So we're actually not far away, despite everything that has happened in the last couple of months. We were not far away from the current forecast for the end of the year. Now, obviously, there's a lot more that can happen in the next month or so. But if I look at it on a year-to-date basis, we are pretty close to where we thought we would be at the end of the year. And I think that pretty much sums up all the, you know, what the foreign exchange markets can tell you about these very large swings that can happen on short order. But the further back you pull, ideally they even themselves out. First half we saw RMB strengthening very healthily. I think it was about 4%, and then in the last 2 months RMB has come down 6% plus. So we are on a net basis still not that bad, but we fully acknowledge that we are in an area where uncertainty is high, and that is without doubt. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, that's great. Hey, thanks. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Brandon.
Thank you so much. And our next question comes from the line of Joy Wang from Deutsche Bank. Joy, your line is now open.
Thank you. Morning. A couple of questions from me. First of all, just in terms of transactions that are still pending to be closed, I assume, you know, the China acquisition will come through in 4Q. If we take all these into account, what would be the gearing?
Which China acquisition are you referring to, Joy?
No, the latest announced China acquisition and Guangzhou one and the Shanghai one.
Okay. The Guangzhou one is not very large, so I don't foresee a meaningful increase in gearing on Guangzhou. In terms of H55, it is undertaken by RCCP IP3, mm-hmm. and RCCP IP3 is we have an effective stake of 21%. So the gearing on the acquisition will not be reflected on the balance sheet of CapitaLand Group.
Right. Okay. So all of those will be reflected off as off balance sheet then.
Guangzhou will be on balance sheet, but I don't think that's material. H55 will be off balance sheet.
Okay. Okay. Cool. And then on the China's recognition, I think just to confirm, we're looking at about 6.4 billion to be recognized in 4Q. Is that correct? And also, is there what would be the margin? Would that be kind of in line with what you have been recognizing over the years?
Yeah, I'll let Zhixiang comment if he wants to on margin. Again, we don't typically talk about margins other than in broad terms. But yes, your number of 6 billion, circa 6 billion RMB is right for Q4. That's what we anticipate to be recognizing.
Okay.
Zhixiang, would you like to comment on margins other than the general guidance we have given?
Right. In general, we have healthy margins between 10 to 20%, depending on the city. As we all know, every city in China is huge and it's difficult to just generalize. But what I would say is that right now our execution is bang on track, and then we are looking at achieving the general spread of between 10 to 20 for 10.
Yeah, so 10 to 20 is very broad. What we have previously guided before is sort of mid-teens, and I think that's fair to say, Joy. We will continue to aim to deliver mid-teens.
Yeah, the reason I'm asking is...
Yeah, in general, the first-year cities will give us a healthier margin because of the higher price premiums that can be achieved, and then the second-tier cities will obviously be at the lower of the band. But yeah, we are, on average, mid-teens, quite safe.
Thanks, Zhixiang. Yeah.
Thank you. The reason I'm asking is, I think year-to-date you've recognized about this similar quantum, right? So are we expecting 4Q to be a bumpy quarter for China recognition?
Did you say bumpy or bumper?
No, as in a bumper quarter, as a better quarter.
I think the answer is yes.
Okay, and then lastly on the China acquisition, the Shanghai acquisition, what's the underwriting assumption in terms of rent?
Sorry, Joy, what's that?
The underwriting assumption for the rent for the China Shanghai acquisition.
Have we disclosed that? I don't think we have. No, I don't think we were ready to share that yet, Joy.
Okay, and the expected IR, anything?
Something, yes. But I don't think that is a number that we've released.
Okay, but do you expect rents to be in line with what market is charging at the moment for the area?
Yes.
Yeah. Andrew, maybe I'll jump in here. Yes, we expect the H55 to perform in line with market, if not above. Maybe the best comparable would be the Sinema Center, which is currently calling for rents around about 11 RMB per square meter per month.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Joy, just a clarification on the 6 billion. That is on a 100% basis. Some of these projects are not wholly owned by us.
Yeah, so what I'm trying to get is for the 6 billion you recognized for the first 3Q, right? That has a high proportion of your ownership will have a higher proportion, or it will be similar?
Let's see, or see if we can get back to you on that. I think the overall statement of Q4 being a good one remains correct. Whether it is 100% or some percentage thereof, if you just do the math, 6.2 billion to date, with 6.4 billion or 6 billion plus expected on a 100% basis, I think it's fair to say that we think Q4 will be a good one for us.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Joy.
Thank you so much. And our next question comes from the line of Kula Watan from The Edge. Kula, your line is now open.
Yes, hi. Good morning, Andrew. Yeah, just a couple of questions on the interest rate trends, because they're going up. So what are you expecting for the $3.3 billion that you're going to renew for next year? Is it likely to be higher than the rates that you have currently? And also, you mentioned that for the green bond, if your ESG is better, the interest cost is lower. So could you give us an idea of how much you would save on that? And there's another question. Yes. So on the China debt, do you take what portion do you take onshore and what portion do you take offshore? And are you likely to go all sort of onshore now? And the last question is on Nomad. I understand that you pay, that CapitaLand pays a CMT, a market rents for the space in Plaza Sing, but does CapitaLand make money out of the rents, or is it do you lose versus what you pay Plaza CMT? That's it.
Thanks, Gula. There are quite a few questions there. I'll try and see if I can remember them. Number one is interest rates rising. Yes, absolutely. I think those of us who follow the Sing dollar market clearly are seeing between 40 to 60 basis points increase from sort of same time last year, and that is coming through on the base rates. I think what we believe is helpful or beneficial to us is that we are not seeing a meaningful increase in the credit spreads or the credit price that CapitaLand is having to pay. So while everyone has to absorb a higher base rate, I think on a relative basis, CapitaLand is better off in a situation where there is a flight to quality and lenders are more willing to provide funding for good credit for companies and companies that have strong balance sheets. So we've done our numbers, and at $3.3 billion of refinancing next year, again, this is across the board on various currencies, various geographies, and including our REITs, we will have to reflect a higher cost of borrow. We don't anticipate that this will meaningfully impact the P&L. It is in the impact to the P&L, taking very conservative assumptions, is probably between 1 to 2% of forecast profit as it currently stands. So whilst we are mindful of the increase in rates, number one, the hit to P&L is, I don't think, very meaningful. And secondly, I think on a relative basis, CapitaLand is better off. I think your second question was around China debt. Onshore versus offshore. This is very, very difficult to capture holistically because, as you know, we have China. Our Chinese investments are held through a variety of vehicles. Some of them are listed. We have multiple private equity funds. We have 100% owned vehicles. We have joint ventures in residential and in commercial developments. Depending on how these are structured, the split between on and offshore borrow is it can vary widely. So it's a difficult question to answer. I'm afraid I don't have an answer for you. Roughly 70% of our debt is Sing dollar debt, which is higher than the amount that we have in Singapore. So it is fair to conclude that some of that debt that is being drawn down to go into foreign investments is Sing dollar debt. That is a function, again, both of structural requirements and, you know, I have to say, in some cases, it just makes sense from a pricing standpoint for us to borrow in Sing dollars. The trade-off clearly is then we expose ourselves to the foreign currency fluctuation and we depart from the natural hedge that we would ideally like to take out. Question number three is on the green bond. How much is the savings? I don't think we've disclosed that, and I don't think we can, other than to say that it is a number of basis points. Every year, there will be a date where we will measure our performance based on the parameters that we have agreed with our lender, and which RobecoSAM will audit. And if we perform better or we improve in a certain number of these categories, then we get the ability to reduce the agreed borrowing rate by a certain number of basis points. And this can happen throughout the life of the loan. I think, believe it's a five-year loan. Obviously, we have a floor and a ceiling. The price cannot go up. The price can only go down. So it is I'm very excited about this product. And again, I cannot give enough credit to our committed partners, DBS and RobecoSAM, for joining us on this. Number four on Nomad, I believe the rental structure is one where we have rented out a space from CMT, and we are subletting that space to, I think, close to 16 or 18 tenants at a margin. But I think it's good to emphasize that the idea here is not for CapitaLand to make money on the sub-rental, but to deliver proof of concept, i.e. we have a product that blends the virtual and the physical, and we are bringing out of the lab variety of concepts that we have been working on, or Wilson's team has been working on for the last few months, and we'd like to see how this takes in a live retail environment. So it is. I think still you could qualify this as quasi-incubation, but it's taking it to the next level, right? It's taking it out of the lab, and you are testing it in a live environment with no shortage of retail partners who are very keen to see if these ideas can work. And if it works, then I think the rollout to the CMT portfolio and the CapitaLand retail portfolio is one that can be made fairly quickly. So again, it's an interesting interim step for us, and one that we are very excited about, particularly if you think about Funan coming in 2019 next year, which has been billed as our you know, sort of 2.0 retail platform. So I think this is all gathering momentum towards the launch of Funan. I hope that answers your questions.
Thank you so much. And our next question comes from the line of Derek Tan from DBS. Derek, your line is now open.
Thank you. Good morning. Andrew, if I may ask a follow-up question on the latest site that you won in Shanghai. I think Joy asked the question just now. I mean, you can't share some numbers, but we're just going to sense whether should we assume that given that you're buying a property that's close to completion, so the yield that you are able to achieve should be closer to your existing, more stabilized Raffles City projects, or should we expect it to be at the lower end of where some of your projects are, where it's still currently gestating?
Yeah, I'll let Zhixiang answer that. My sense is that it's, whilst it is close to completion, it is not operational, it's not stabilized. So I think one should take the more prudent view that this will be akin to a mall that we have just about to open. And so you should see yield on costs more in the range of the Changning, Shenzhen, Hangzhou cluster rather than the stabilized portfolio. But Zhixiang, please correct me if I'm wrong.
Thanks, Andrew. And thank you, Derek, for the question. We will be completing the construction second Q of next year, where the office will be introduced. We will, of course, do pre-leasing before that. And then in 2020, second or third quarter, we will be able to launch the mall. Given that the two assets are released to the market at different stages, what Andrew said is exactly correct. There's going to be a very standard ramp-up period for 2019 second half all the way to end of 2020, right? And then we expect that 2021 will be the first year where all our available NLA or office space will be leased out. At that point in time, we do expect this asset to trend in line with market for good performing asset. Like our Raffles cities, they are the Raffles City Shanghai, Raffles City Changning. We are in line with market. It should be say a tad above 4% yield to upwards to 4.5 or even 5. You know, but in general, we expect this Northbound project to behave very similar to RCS and RCCN, given that it is Shanghai, given that the locations are all very good. That answer
the question, Derek. Yes, thank you. Just to follow up also on the sites that you have won this year, I noted that you have invested in Guangzhou, I think three sites already since the start of the year. Do you mind if you give us a sense what's potential GDV? And given that you've invested there, do you think you can get return, say, margins that in excess of what you've been able to get for your portfolio currently? I.e., could you get more than mid-teens based on the investment price that you paid?
Okay, we have gotten secured two projects, three sites. So the first is Guangzhou Zhengcheng. That's a residential play. There are two sites adjacent to each other, but essentially that's a residential project of about 150,000 GFA. For that project, we are very, very optimistic about the margins that we can secure, given that in Zhengcheng itself, it provides a supply of good residential products to serve Guangzhou City. Guangzhou City, as you know, suffers from the standard HPRs, housing purchase restrictions, whereas Zhengcheng itself, at least presently, you don't have that much pricing restrictions. So residents of Guangzhou are free to buy, and then because it is well connected by subway, the sales in Zhengcheng itself is going great guns. So we do expect this Zhengcheng to be a well-executed project that will give us our expected returns. The other project that we secured just a couple of days ago, that is in the mature Guangzhou Science City. The project itself basically has about 30% strata and 70% investment holdings. For the strata portion, we are again very confident because we'll be developing what we call Qiye Biezhu, which is office that is housed in smaller units, okay, suitable for smaller enterprises or SMEs. These kind of products go very well in the Science City itself. The pricing range will be between 40 to 60K per square meter. That is something that will drive our margins. The investment holdings part, we will have a grey office, and then we will also have a service apartment. The service apartment, we are very, very optimistic because the whole area in Science City is currently a lot of MNCs and research institutions all headquartered there, but that is underserved by hospitality options. So we are confident that when we put a for example a Somerset there, it should be able to deliver good numbers. Overall, this is the second acquisition is an office play. As we all know, Guangzhou right now is enjoying a good run. The office vacancy in the entire Guangzhou region has come down to as low as 6%. I mean, a lot of FDIs are going in, especially into the Greater Bay Area, as alluded by Andrew. We are watching this with a lot of interest. And even in Science City, the office vacancies have come down to a mid-teens level. I think 3 to 4 years of continuous improvement. So again, we will be delivering products that will meet the demands of both the Science City for office as well as for service apartment.
I see. So thank you very much for the color.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, yes, it does. Yes, thank you very much. Last question for me. Just your thoughts on Singapore's dual. I think Andrew, you mentioned it's completing fairly soon. I would assume there'll be some form of pre-opening expenses. So could you give us a sense, when do you think you'll be EBITDA positive? And if you can, if you don't mind sharing, what would be your view on cost for this project?
Sorry, Derek, your question was around Jewel.
Jewel, yeah. When would he be loss-making in when he first opened because of pre-opening expenses? And I was just wondering whether when will he be EBITDA positive, and if you could share some form of returns or new on cost on this, if you can. I'm just wondering.
Yeah, I think it's probably fair to expect a very typical pattern of pre-opening as well as first-year operations. I don't think we anticipate any deviation from that trend, Derek. I don't have any numbers for you. What I think I'm focusing on is the actual opening after multiple years of development. And so we expect to see a very similar profile. You convert your PUD into operating capital. That's the first step. I don't think you expect a big bang in terms of contribution to profit, but you are on your way, and we are very excited about the project because it's of its iconic nature. I think what is very interesting about Jewel is that it has the potential to be something very special globally. We may not get there on day one, but the potential will remain. And so that, I think, is why, together with our partner, we have high hopes for this project.
Okay, thank you. Excellent. Thank you. That's all for me. Thank you.
Thanks, Derek.
Thank you so much. And our next question comes from the line of Louis Chua from the Credit Suisse. Louis, your line is now open.
Hello. Good morning, Andrew. Firstly, just a follow up on a question, a comment you made on the real estate AUM. Basically, with the new Shanghai acquisition that adds about 4 billion Sing, we're pretty close to your 2020 target. So, just thinking of how should we look at this in terms of whether will the target be revised, or for 2019, it could be one where maybe we'll focus a bit more on gestating the already acquired assets.
Yeah, I know it's a good question, Louis. We're happy to be getting close. We'd love to be able to push up that number. I think for now, Chee Koon's quite happy driving towards 100 billion. Obviously, there are a few things that go into that AUM, right? If you're divesting, that AUM comes down, and so it is a function of being able to redeploy. You know, this year we did pretty well in taking that 4 billion and putting it into 6 billion. So we are net investors. The REITs are on their own path as well. So we have to recognize that the REITs have their own plans for portfolio rejuvenation, capital recycling. And in certain periods, they may be net sellers. In other periods, they may be net investors. So it is a number that we aim to strive towards, but there are a lot of things that go into that AUM number. So stay tuned. We'd love to be able to raise that number when we can. But I think 100 billion is probably a nice round target that the group can strive towards in the next year and a half or so.
Got it. And the other question that I had was, if I look to your last page of your slides, I think investment properties contribute about 88% of total EBIT. And of course, in the 4Q, we're going to have a bumper contribution from your China RESI. So just, again, getting your sense of what should be the so-called run rate we should expect in future, given your asset composition and all?
Yeah, so this is a good question. I think, if I'm honest, the IP looks high. We would like Resi to be a bit more balanced. You know about the 2080, and that 2080 is a broad number that applies to a variety of things. Obviously, you're going to get the lumpiness from a trading property portfolio, from a capital recycling plan on the IP side. So again, we treat that 2080 as a broad target. It applies to a variety of things, right? Capital deployed, return, assets, and so on and so forth. It is currently, again, trading light. And as those of you who follow us will know that there is a reason for that. We want to bump that up. If you look at where the capital has gone in the last few months, particularly around the conversation you've just had with Zhixiang, what we have been doing deploying capital into building the residential pipeline. In Singapore, we now have 1.5 projects. We like that exposure currently. And in Vietnam, there is a concerted effort to grow the residential business. So what we'd love to be able to report to you in the near future is a slightly more balanced split between IP and trading.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Louis.
Thank you so much. And our next question comes from the line of Wilson Ng from Morgan Stanley. Wilson, your line is now open.
Hi, good morning, everyone. We have a first question, again, following up on H55. It was reported on the slides that it was acquired below replacement cost. So could we get a sense of what is the replacement cost in Shanghai?
Thanks, Wilson. If you look at the two asset classes separately, maybe I'll just give some guidance about the asset values in the North Bund area. For office assets in the North Bund, you typically have mostly Grade B. So you have anywhere from on a per square meter basis, 55,000, all the way up to as high as, I think, the last traded number was nearly 100,000 for a very good class Grade B office. For the retail is underserved, so perhaps looking at our own mall and Sui On Mall, these are only the two malls there. It should trend between 40 to 60 on a per square meter basis. So if you combine these two together, our expectation is that replacement cost should hover high 60s, if not low 70s. We are acquiring the asset at low 60s. So we are acquiring below acquisition. Another way to look at this, I think the last traded parcel next to our North Bund asset was the one secured by Jingmao in 2016. That was on a per square meter basis about 45 to 46,000 land cost. So if you look at the H55 asset, one would easily relate to a per square meter cost of say north of 20,000, if not 25,000, to build a prime grade A office and a mall. So with that, then again, it alludes to maybe high 60s as a replacement cost. So from that point of view, acquiring at low 60s, again, we feel that we are comfortably below, this is what our acquisition cost, sorry, is actually comfortably below replacement cost. So two points of view. Thanks.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Maybe following up also on China, just get a sense of what the overall land bank is. If we include all the land acquisitions this year and another 6 billion renminbi due to be handed over this quarter, like what's the potential inventory that would be available for sale right now? And whether we would have to further replenish land bank, or are we good for now?
Okay, the first thing I'll make is that going back to what Andrew mentioned, we are trying to increase the proportion of trading in our overall portfolio. So we will continue to acquire land bank, especially for residential in the five core city clusters that we are currently well invested in. Right now, I think looking into the fourth quarter, I think we should have an inventory of 6,000 to 7,000 launch ready, of which we expect more than half to be actually launched. But that will definitely depend on market conditions. So that's a look into the 4Q. Overall, we have added the two residential projects in Guangzhou, Zhengcheng, and Chongqing. That gives us about, I think, in excess of 400,000 GFA if you add the two projects together. Chongqing and this is Guangzhou, Zhengcheng. Looking into my crystal ball for next year, I think we are expecting that we will be able to acquire similar size residential projects, perhaps 3 to 4 for 2019. So that will give you a sense of how much land bank we are expecting to or planning to acquire next year. But again, everything depends on the market conditions and the right pricing.
Thank you. Just last question from me, I think probably more for Andrew. So with $4 billion of divestments this year, do you think you'll be able to sustain the pace of divestments going into next year, considering, like, for example, one of the Raffles City funds has already been converted to an income fund?
We will certainly look to do that, Wilson. I think that the goal is, again, $3 billion plus.
Yep.
It is not an end unto itself. The reason, as you know, is clearly that we don't want to be overly tied to our assets. If they're able to be monetized at the right time, allowing us to A, recognize good gains, and B, recycle and redeploy that capital, then that's something we should do. I think the REITs have a similar approach. So if we've done the sums, and the reason we like $3 billion is because if we find reasons to sell and we sell well and we recognize good portfolio gain, then that gets us to our 8% plus ROE. So the target is actually the ROE, right? We need to deliver sustainable ROE. If my current business is set up in a way that the operating income contributes 50% of that, then the remaining amount must come from a combination of healthy, sustain capital recycling, and in a good environment, a fair amount, a sensible amount of revaluation is whatever the market is gives us. So working backwards, you come to a number of roughly $3 billion. Again, that is going to change year on year because that's a gross value. Our effective share of those gains will depend on what assets are sold and who owns those assets. So again, I encourage you to work backwards from what we need in order to deliver 8%. And then we work out, okay, based on that requirement to give 8% plus to our shareholders, what do we have in our portfolio that is looking like it is the right candidate to be monetized, given that where it is in its maturity, given where it is in its geography, given where it is in its asset class, and what is the appetite in terms of transactional demand. So those factors will come together to tell us that this is the right time to put this asset on the market. But if you look at our consolidated balance sheet of north of 60 billion, our effective share of those assets of 30 billion, selling 3 billion worth of gross value should not be something that we cannot sustain.
Thank you. That's all for me.
Thanks, Wilson. We only have time for a couple more questions, I'm afraid. So we'll take a few more, and then I think it's probably a good time to ring off. But again, thank you in advance for dialing in. It's been a very good session. I think all of us here see the benefit of this, and I hope you do too. We will look to continue this in Q1 and Q3. But again, thank you very much. I hope that has been helpful. Operator, I think we can take a couple more questions.
Yes, thank you so much. We will be taking two more questions. And the next question comes from the line of Min Chow from Nomura. Min Chow, your line is now open.
Hi, morning. Just two questions. The first is, would you be able to give some color on the rents at Jewel? And if you are not able to give a precise sort of like numbers, would it be able to sort of like shed some light on whether the rents there are better or worse compared to Tampines Mall, for instance? Number two is that the tenant sales in Singapore for the first 9 months is up 1.2% year on year. So this is more than double what CMT reported in terms of their 0.5% year on year. So just want to get a sense of where these tenant sales in Singapore is coming from. Is it more from ION? Just to confirm. Thanks.
Okay, Minjay, thanks for your challenging question. I think the best answer I can give on Jewel is that it is leasing up typically as a destination mall in Singapore. I made a comment earlier about Jewel's potential, and I think the potential is that it has the DNA to be something much larger globally. But in the current frame, in its first post-operational phase, it looks like it will resemble a destination mall in Singapore with the same type of tenants that you would expect in a destination mall. So I think that's about as much color as I can share with you right now. It is leasing up very nicely. We have got 95% committed leases. I'm just looking at some data here. It is, again, I think, yeah, it is quite typical of a destination mall in Singapore. And then your second question, Minjay, was on tenant sales growth?
Yes, the tenant sales growth for Singapore, for your portfolio, is about 1.2. CMT is about 0.5. So I'm just wondering, the bulk of that difference, does it come from ION?
I cannot definitively say it is ION, but it's likely that it is ION.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Jinjay. If you want more clarity, we'll take this offline. I'll come back to you on that.
Okay, thank you. Thanks,
okay. Thanks, Jinjay.
Thank you so much. And our last question comes from the line of Vijay Radaraham from RHB Research. Your line is now open.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking time. Just a few questions. Firstly, on this Shanghai asset acquisition, can I know the valuation of this property on a standalone basis? Because I noticed that you have mentioned the property value is $19.5 billion. Is this the standalone valuation? Have you acquired it at a 35% discount to valuation? The latest acquisition?
Yeah, no, I think the property value on a 100% basis is 19.5. The number that you see published is the equity stake that we have taken together with GIC.
Okay, but what was the valuation of the property which you acquired? Meaning,
Andrew, the valuation is slightly higher at about 20.6 billion. Yeah. It's a valuation done by DTZ in I think August. Yeah.
Okay. So it's a slight discount to what the actual valuation is.
Yes, we refer to the DTZ valuation as at August. Yeah.
Okay. Just follow up on the Pearl Bank Apartments. Have you gotten the necessary approvals for all these projects, and when do you plan to launch this project, and what's your outlook on land banking for Singapore going forward?
The answer to the question is yes, we have our approvals. We intend to commence construction, I think, sometime in 2Q next year, and we will launch shortly thereafter. In terms of land banking, I think the comment I made earlier was that we are quite happy with the exposure we have to the Singapore residential market now. My sense of it is that if we can continue to deliver a run rate of between 1 to 2 projects a year, I that's the current sense of where we would be comfortable in terms of our Singapore residential exposure. Obviously, this is going to be very much predicated on how this situation shakes out, which I'm sure all of us will recognize is something that we're all waiting to see.
Okay, thanks. Also, Andrew, can you will you be able to share the look-through gearing of the group?
I'm sorry?
The see-through gearing of the group. Would you be able to share the look-through gearing?
Yeah, give me a second on that. What I can probably share with you is that we are currently at 0.51 on balance sheet. I think the cleanest way to talk about look through is if I were to take out the REITs, the gearing level would probably be about 0.38. This is on a net DE basis.
Okay.
Is that helpful?
Yeah, that should be helpful. That's helpful. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks very much, Vijay.
Yeah, thanks. That's all.
We will hand it over to the operator now. And again, thank you very much, everyone, for dialing in. We look forward to seeing you very shortly. Have a good quarter, everyone.
Thank you so much. I'll now hand over back to Grace for the closing remarks. Go ahead, please. Thank you.
Hi, it's Grace again. I just want to thank you for dialing in. If you have any questions that you didn't manage to ask, you know, please feel free to text me or send me an email. Okay, I wish everybody a good rest of the week. See you guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. And that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.